Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning, and it's very nice to have you with us. It is the 20th of January and, well, it's State of the Union Day, so we'll talk a little bit about that. We'll find out many other issues that we have to discuss. We have a chock-full list. I think we have like 9 items to discuss.
Whoa, that's a lot.
So, I know. So we'll get to all of them. Let me introduce our panel to you before we do that, and then I'll tell you how you can be part of the fun. Just a reminder, we're going to be broadcasting from the Sterling and Francine Clark Art Institute tomorrow morning. Yeah. So we will this wonderful group will not be getting together tomorrow in this studio, but we will be broadcasting from the Clark, and we have a great setup, a great lineup of guests. And we'll be talking to, of course, Michael Conforti, the director of the Clark. We'll be talking to Richard Rand, the curator, about their wonderful exhibits. Plus, we'll be talking to people from wonderful museums throughout the Berkshires, MassMoCA, the Williams College Museum of Art, the Berkshire Museum. So we're going to be having a great time tomorrow.
Wow. That sounds good.
And you're going to be with me, right, Alan?
Yeah, no, man. What time to get there?
Right,
I think
Alan?
You need an hour and a half to get there from Great Barrington.
Is that true?
Well, Roselle used to go an hour and 15 minutes to get to Mass College of Liberal Arts.
Okay. So well, this is Williamstown, so yeah, about an hour.
So I figure it's about an hour. A little over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And we probably have to leave about the same time.
Yeah. Now, this morning, I was on the great bike. And I, after this,
did you make good time?
Yeah, yeah. The Law and Order is on cable
all
channel 27, but they're doing a new round, and it's great. The old Law and Order, and now, but now I went to channel 11, and I was watching the new priest who is a detective on. You'll know the name of this, right, Joe?
Father Dowling?
No. On the, how you say it, the. You know, comes on public television. That's what I meant.
Oh, the Brit.
The Brit.
Yes.
It's this detective.
It's a BBC priest who's. It's a new series.
It's right? A new series, and it's excellent.
Yes.
I want to recommend it. They play their nighttime stuff in the morning at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Cool. I have not checked that out yet. Rosemary is.
Rosemary's got
a. Wake up, Rosemary.
I'm still not awake. Five
Rosemary's got a hand over her face and saying, "Oh, okay, go ahead."
All right. So anyway, we have a wonderful show tomorrow, and I do hope you will join us for that. And then, of course, we'll be back in the studio for all of the fun and frivolity on Thursday morning. So that's tomorrow. Alan will be there, and Alan is here this morning. Times Union Associate Editor Mike Spain is with us this morning. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning.
Thank you very much for being with us. And Albany Journalism Professor and Investigative Reporter Rosemary Armeo is here.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us. Also, we welcome you. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Also, if you go to our webpage, which is at WAMC.org, you can see the post for the panel, which is 1/20/15, which is today's date, 1/20/15, and you can click there and get in and comment on the items that we are talking about this morning. All right, so let's get started. Let's talk a little bit about the State of the Union address and what will be going on. I know a lot of different places. I threw out a bunch of different articles this morning about the State of the Union. One is about giving the State of the Union address against a backdrop of deep partisan divide. I also was reading an article last night in the Washington Post, which I found fascinating, called "Why Do We Even Need a State of the Union Address?" what's the purpose of the State of the Union Address? And then also the latest poll numbers. Alan and I were talking to Lee Mieringoff yesterday in our debrief, and but an ABC poll out this morning showing Obama with a 50% approval rate.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
So that is also what you walk into the State of the Union with. So. Does anyone want to tackle this first of sort of what we're expecting from the president tonight, and then we can
But first I want to read Roz's letter, if I may.
All right.
Now,
what does Roz have to say?
Roz says, "Good morning. If you talk about the president's speech today, I would appreciate your answering this question."
All right.
: Why does he leak the contents ahead of the speech? It would be much more compelling if he didn't. Thanks for a consistently compelling show. And that's from Rosalind.
Well, that's a practice that's been underway for decades now, and we're seeing it in New York also, where they dribble out some of the highlights. They try to get people's attention, and then it's dramatically presented in totality. And usually there's a few surprises, but it's sort of to build the drumbeat, I guess, for the big event that that is happening tonight in Washington.
This president has done a tour, has gone out a couple of events, talking about what he wants to make his agenda. I think, I am sure that in the postscript to tonight's, in the coverage of tonight's State of the Union address, we will hear the phrase that we always hear after every State of the Union, after every State of the State address, the devil is in the details, which makes me shiver every time I heard it. But that's what we'll hear. But we do get a few more details about the things that have been set out. And we look at this as a speech about the economy. We look at this as, from what we're told so far, about
community colleges.
That's right. Stabilizing.
About tax reform.
That's right.
About people who are here and need to be protected.
Immigration?
Perhaps immigration.
Taking from the rich and giving to the poor.
A little Robin Hood stuff going on
Robin
there,
Hood,
right?
Yeah.
Okay, so here's my bottom line. Ready? This Republican Congress is not going to do what he wants them to.
No.
Period. He's just
I'm shocked to hear you say that.
You know, he no longer has to cater to the Democrats that control one of the houses of Congress because they no longer do. Now he is going to sort of take on Congress, the Republicans.
And make them look bad.
And go directly to the American people and try to strike a wedge between the American populace and the Republicans who can control Congress. So, you know, if he gets popular support behind him, as the polls are beginning to indicate, there might be some momentum for some of this agenda.
So can I ask a question? So if how much do you get, and this goes really to Roz's point, but how much do you get in credit just for mentioning things? So we won't hear a lot of details, but then it just becomes kind of a litany. So If you come out and say, like, I just got a press release from Kirsten Gillibrand's office, and she said that the State of the Union will spotlight on college affordability, and she's calling on the president also to make college safer by passing a campus sexual assault prevention bill. I'm just going to use this as an example. I'm not saying this is happening. I'm just going to use this as an example.
Sure.
So if the president is talking and says, okay, we need to make college more affordable, and while we're at it, I want to see the passing of a campus sexual assault prevention bill as well. And that's pretty much all you have to say. And then how much do you get points just for that, right?
Yeah.
This is something Obama's really good at. This is his thing, is putting out great ideas and saying, wouldn't it be nice if, and then he rolls them all out. He doesn't get them accomplished. So he sparkles in this. It's wonderful entertainment to sit there and watch, to listen to it. What will be a great speech. He's funny. He's articulate. I think he's right. It has nothing to do, however, with politics. You just sit there then and watch who applauds and who doesn't.
Do we really need this whole thing? I seriously disagree with you, Rosemary.
I know. That's what you do.
Yeah. Well, I know. I seriously. It's all about politics. It's all about politics. It's all about the coming presidential election. It's all about making sure that the Republicans get put into a particular position in this country. And so, the more he does these things, the better it is for many people. As you say, you agree with him. I agree with him on this stuff. And we'll see. I think that you'll find a tremendous amount of goodwill towards the president for saying all of this.
It would be nice if no one jumps up and yells, "You lie, sir," as has happened in the past.
I'm not so sure that wouldn't be good for him.
Or the scowling Supreme Court justices.
Yeah, I love that too. I love all the drama of this, although I think it's kind of useful. And I'm sorry, I keep thinking of George W. Wasn't he the one who, in his State of the Union, called for a new space program? Yeah, that went way far. I expect this tax change will do the same.
Inevitably, there'll be some proposals that'll be dead on arrival. But with
which Alan, ones of his won't be?
Well, that's a good question. If there is momentum, and he proposes a lot of things that gain a lot of popularity, is there a better chance that maybe one or two might actually come in some form?
Like, for example, the community college idea being free for everybody.
$60 million, how many? I've forgotten million. The price. Yeah, well, yeah. But, $60 million doesn't sound like enough.
The bees.
Yeah. but to me, the idea of that is there are a lot of Republican businessmen in this country who need trained workers, people who can go to college and get out and do, and instead of having to import people from other places because they have those degrees. So and also, I think the brilliance of his proposal is that it's for everyone, as opposed to just for people who are poor. Now, there will be people who disagree with me about that. But the brilliance is that instead of the middle class saying, oh, yeah, we'll give something else to them, you know, at the bottom, everybody says, okay, this is for us too, and we like it. I think it's really a great idea.
Don't you think the middle class tax proposal is going to get a lot of discussion and some momentum, and some version of that is going to be getting support on both sides of the aisle in Congress?
You know, this is a tough one, Mike. If 1% of the country owned most of the country, you know.
They do.
And all of a sudden we say to these guys who couldn't spend that money if their lives depend on it, you know, we'll go along with this, you know, they're going to hate it. They're going to send out their lobbyists. They're going to go to K Street. They're going to get all these people to come and say, oh, no, no, it's communism. It's redistribution of wealth. It's this and it's that. You know what? I said it yesterday. I'm going to say it again. They are undermining themselves. Franklin Roosevelt knew that if you took people's houses away and if you didn't give them work, you were fomenting revolution. And he saved this country, in my opinion, from the potential for revolution. Not, there'll be people who say, well, too bad. There are people who I know who hate Franklin Roosevelt because he did.
Well, yeah, and Franklin Roosevelt's the one who turned the State of the Union into a big spectacle, too, which I think it basically is. It's a speech. And Obama has failed consistently in his presidency to get what he wants by talking with, by dealing with Congress. You can't get in front of Congress and say, here's what would be a great idea, let's do this, and expect buy-in. And that's what he's doing again. I do like that he's not sitting back and acting all defensive and waiting to get all these measures he's going to have to veto from the Republicans. But let's make no mistake about them. This is just talk.
The article I sent was from the Washington Post by Philip Bump, who in the second paragraph of the article says, the State of the Union address used to be the State of the Union letter, thanks in part to John Barrett's having invented television more than a century into our nation's existence. But even at the outset, the State of the Union was just the State of the Union listed in Article 2 of the Constitution in the spirit of a job requirements listing on a Craigslist help wanted ad. The president, it reads, shall from time to time give to Congress information of the State of the Union and also deal with ambassadors, obey the law, and proficient in Microsoft Office. So my question is, and this goes back to a conversation that we had back in the fall when the president made a major address and it was not covered by the networks. I mean, do you think we're going to hit a time where the State of the Union won't even be covered on television?
On the contrary, I think everybody loves a party, and this is a party. You know, you got your Super Bowl, you got your World Series, you got your State of the Union. And like that.
I always like the Republicans, I mean, in this case, the Republican senators, but usually the whatever legislators are on the opposite side of the aisle at that moment who are booing the president and they're not standing and they do all that. And then when the president leaves, they're running over with their copies of the State of the Union.
Absolutely.
To get autographed.
Yeah, yeah. That's good. That's good.
Get their photo op.
Right.
But most of
take
them.
Take my picture, please.
And by the way,
president.
Some of the people, I knew one congressman who'd get down there
right.
really, really early. So
on
could
the
get
aisle.
On the
right
aisle,
on the
seat
aisle.
And be, and
yeah.
be
good,
seen.
On national
good
TV.
Shot.
Yeah.
But
I'm going to be looking at the gloves Michelle wears.
But the, yeah. but the net, Joe, getting back to your point,
yes.
all the networks are really gearing up for this. I mean, you know, CNN Party. And MSNBC are trying to do some real-time analysis, and Bloomberg is going to have it live. The three traditional broadcast networks are going to be big on it. Fox is going crazy on it. I mean, they're all got their pundits in there ready to, like, instantly analyze and, you know, extrapolate on what every word the president's saying. So
right.
it is kind of the Super Bowl of politics until the election comes along.
So with that said, we should probably note at this point that we'll be broadcasting it live here on WAMC beginning at 9 o'clock.
But my absolute favorite point, and Rosemary, you know, was, or Mike just mentioned that you know, some don't stand up, and so, but most do. And one of the great traditions of the State of the Union address is that everybody gets up on their feet and applauds the office of the president. So and so it's a great moment for him as he as you know as he walks in.
Who was the House Speaker who always fell asleep?
McCormick.
Yeah, that's John great. McCormick. That's great. All right, we're going to take a break. We have some some business to take care of and make.
That was good.
Duly noted.
Okay,
we'll take a break, and we'll be back with – we're going to go to news and catch up on some stuff. And
one last thing. The name of the thing, the name of the game is – I like it like that. No, is Grant Chester is the new PBS series.
Grant James. Chester.
Grant Chester. And yes, it's superb, says Sarah. No, says Robin.
And we'll be
says
back.
Says somebody, Leslie.
And we'll be back after the Grant Chester. Good morning and welcome back to the Roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us and our Roundtable panel for this Tuesday morning, the 20th of January. We're talking about the State of the Union address that will be given tonight. We're going to move on to other topics, but we welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And Alan, you've got some letters.
Well, we had one from Gary who said, how come... You know, I already eliminated it, so I have to remember it now. But basically, you know, it said, how come, you know, he doesn't have a chance of getting this stuff done, and we're making such a fuss about it. We talked about that.
Yeah, it's my point. I agree with him. I'm glad
sets the conversation.
And then Stu wants to know why I forgot. He said I had a memory lapse, and I couldn't remember the name Grantchester. But I never knew the name Grantchester. I only watched the thing. I don't care about the name of it.
That's but it came on while that, you were when you turned it on. It was already in progress.
That, no, yeah.
She gave you an out there, Alan.
Yeah, so, but it wasn't a memory lapse. I'm
sure, sure, it wasn't a memory lapse. No.
What's your name again?
Never.
All right, so let's move on to other topics and find out what else is happening in the world. In the world, I don't know. Do we want to make mention of the 50% poll numbers, or are we just going to take
sure?
That as, I mean, did you want to say
just
anything
did.
On that? Okay, all right. No, but I mean, anything more
he's,
on that?
He's
no.
going up in the polls.
Okay, all right.
He's doing very well.
Yes. People like that. He's being feisty.
That's
and
right.
Jobs
That's
are right, the job market's looking better. Go yeah. Obama.
Okay, let's go to Syria then and talk about American support for a pair of diplomatic initiatives in Syria underscores the shifting views of how the end of how to end the civil war there and the West's quiet retreat from its demand that the country's president step down immediately. This from this morning's New York Times. The Obama administration maintains that a lasting political solution requires the exit of Bashar al-Assad. But facing a military stalemate, well-armed jihadists, and the world's worst humanitarian crisis, the U.S. is going along with international diplomatic efforts that could lead to more gradual change in Syria.
Speaking of memory lapses, am I the only one in this room who remembers how I talked about be careful of who you get in bed with early in the game and said that some of these guys, some of these horrible people, were better off than encouraging some of the people who are not so good. I said it again and again and again.
The U.S.
I'm a prophet in my own time, but nobody seems to be saying, good for you, Alan. That was excellent.
Will you slap him on the back, please,
oh
Rosemary? You're
oh
the closest.
Give an applause track.
Yeah, that's right.
but the U.S. has gotten in a lot of trouble backing dictators, especially in the Middle East, but all over the globe.
So shut your mouth.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact of the matter is you got some really terrible people who are far worse than these dictators out there. That's not true?
This guy should go, but we can't make it happen.
Well, we
and
tried.
Neither
and we
can the
there.
Rebels. Yeah. And a lot has happened since then that has changed the situation, including the rise of ISIS and the explosion of terrorism inside the West. What we're
so
seeing
Al-Qaeda
in France.
Was better even back then?
No, Al-Qaeda was not better. I don't know what might have been done. But the important thing is that right now is we are backing down. We are backing away. We're losing. We've lost this battle. And the best thing now is to make some sort of peace in Syria so people are not running into Turkey and Jordan and all the many places that they have been running to. They have to stay home. That's still better than what we have. And we need a whole
new... Do we have to help Assad stay in control and defeat ISIS in his own country?
We have to defeat ISIS, and that is what we're doing. We already have begun helping Assad, which is painful.
Yeah.
And Yemen is exploding today, too. I don't know if we're going to talk about that.
They're going to kick the prime minister.
Big coup in there. It's a Shia-Sunni fight. And Al-Qaeda is backing the minority Shias. And it's another country that's going to go into this. Is anyone concerned about the number of states that are just disintegrating? Syria has fallen apart. Somalia, now it looks like Yemen is going to go into this. Pakistan is increasingly falling apart. It's frightening. And that makes it much harder to fight and control when you're fighting against a bunch of militias rather than a state government.
And Pakistan has a ton bombs. Let's not forget that.
Let us not forget that.
Unknown assailants. This is just from about an hour ago. Unknown assailants fired shots at a U.S. embassy vehicle in Yemen's capital. According to the U.S. embassy, at the end of a day marked by heavy fighting around the presidential palace, 9 people were killed, 67 others injured Monday in the fighting between government forces and militants. Yemen's health ministry said before the sides agreed to a ceasefire, which is...
Yeah, the embassy people are waiting at moment's notice to leave. Well, I think that embassies are not something that we really need anymore either, but it's a mess.
So how much context can you put it in? You asked a question of, you know, is anyone else noticing all of these things just falling apart? So how much context can we put in as to what's causing that and what we do to Band-Aid it all together?
Yeah, I don't think you can Band-Aid it. That's what we're trying to do, and it's not working tremendously. It's come from a whole lot of things. America's involvement, bad involvement in the Middle East, not being a small part of it. We've backed continue to back terrible regimes. One in Saudi Arabia comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
And so we lose popular support. We invaded Iraq under what turned out to be false and not good reasons. And then once there, we're terrible occupiers. Abu Ghraib did a terrible amount to turn people against the Western ideas and to become jihadists and think that that's great. And we're now seeing that throughout Europe, and ISIS has become very strong, Boko Haram and that's even Northern Africa. We're moving into Central Africa. So it's exploding all over. And the way to fight it is we need to stay out. I don't think we should be in there. And we should be living the way we say we're living by our principles, which we have not done in the Middle East. We have not supported freedom and justice and all the things we supposedly stand for that would make people love us. We need to do that. We need to help moderate Muslims control and run their countries and throw these people out.
But how do you help moderate Muslims control and run their countries? How do you do it?
With money, support, education.
We send tons of money into what we think are.
We send it into military and police. We send it into control. We don't do it into any of the social things. And no, there is no fast solution. That's what we do in this program all the time. What should we do in Syria? What should we do? What should we do in the Ukraine? These are not problems.
Didn't
that are
we try backing
be solved
moderates
in
in Libya and what we thought was a moderate government in Egypt? I mean, these things seem to backfire on us. We pick the wrong ones constantly. Or when they get in there,
Egypt
they
is definitely,
prove not to be what we thought.
Egypt is definitely a heartbreaker. I've just been reading about that. I mean, Morsi and the Muslim Brotherhood might have proved there is a way to democracy with Islam in control. And they messed it up. They totally made a mess of that. Now you end up back in military control.
Well, we'll never really know he would have done. He could have gone that way, and he could have gone the other way.
He sure seemed like he was going to an extremist point. And in Tunisia, you see the Islamists did the same thing. They were really annoying everybody and becoming very extreme. And they backed away, and they are of the government, but not in control anymore. They decide to take a long view and see what happens. Very interesting.
Do you look at something that we're seeing today in Yemen and say, okay, this has been a powder keg that's been waiting to blow
for
a long time, but how many other powder kegs do we see? Because, you know, some go, some don't, and you don't know where to... It's like the spinning plate. So, you know, you're running back and forth, and which one do you address first?
Yeah, I think American power has diminished, or at least changed, if that offends some people, and a notice from the State Department of what's going to happen doesn't have the power it once did. Mm-hmm. And there are other players in this. Russia is a player. Iran is a player. And we're not playing the game very well.
But does it seem like it's the whole world is in disarray, and it wasn't this way 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago, or we're just more aware of it because we engaged in some of these areas and this kind of thing was going on anyway, but now, which one?
Well, I was just thinking one thing, and that is that American public opinion plays a role in this. So that when you see some brutal act by some, ISIS, let's say, putting a gun to somebody's head or chopping somebody's head off, Americans don't like it. They don't like it. Now, are they being manipulated? I don't know. We just got a letter from James who says... no, he didn't say that either. There's a question as to why we do these things, and I don't know. Somehow it's not where it was. It's not where it was.
Why do we do these things? That's a good question.
I remember now. Thank you, Michael. He said it's because of the U.S. oil companies that have been moving the pieces
all
around.
We're protecting U.S. interests in foreign countries. That's gotten us in trouble before a little bit too, hasn't it?
So it would be interesting to know, with the collapse of oil prices and the glut of oil on the market, whether the foreign policy changes.
I don't know. It's the view of the United States and the countries that we're talking about is not good, and that's come over years of an oil-based policy. So if you change now, you're going to have to go a long way to prove them. We've changed now. We've decided to live up to our founding principles and forget about oil for now. Yeah, right.
Right, well...
things happen very quickly in this world. You know, it used to take years to happen. Public opinion and world opinion changes overnight constantly because of mass media. So,
did in Egypt.
The whole thing about public opinion is interesting to me too. In you had the horrible events in Paris, and people turned out by the millions, marched in streets, and bought the magazine, that silly little magazine. And showed support for what? Freedom of speech, freedom of expression, a Western way of life. What did that do? What change will that make in France? And why in the United States does not this happen?
Oh, we know what the change will be. The change will be a loss of civil liberties for a lot of people, and a boot on the neck of those people who would mess with French lives and any other lives. And by the way, that's European wide. It's pan-European, and we are going to see a huge turnout. You know, we just got a letter on Bashar al-Assad who said needs to go because he's forcing the rebels to fight two fronts while they're trying to push back ISIS. The Syrian army is dropping barrel bombs on them, which, by the way, are horribly violent weapons that are killing more civilians than fighters. Bashar al-Assad is a monster, and the U.S. should not consider anything other than ousting him. I just wanted to make sure that letter got read, because it's one side of the picture.
Well, it's
proven to be easier said than done.
Indeed.
And if he is ousted, as we got rid of the guy in Libya, it wasn't a cure-all. It didn't solve the problem at all. It's a mess there, too. Another one of the failing states that I mentioned.
Let's take a break. When we come back, we'll finish up with the many topics that we have yet to discuss. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Rosemary Armeo, Mike Spain, and I'm Joe Donahue. We'll be back after this short break.
Support comes from Ulster County Resource Recovery Agency, using food scraps, yard waste, and compostable paper to create nutrient-rich compost that helps conserve water, control weeds, and reduces need for chemical fertilizers. Compost now available at the agency, ucrra.org. Empire State Youth Orchestra and Select Chorus performing ORF's Carmina Burana at the Palace Theater this Sunday, sponsored by Hannay Reels and Bank of America. PalaceAlbany.com or ESYO.com. And Lake George Kayak Company, a kayak, canoe, and stand-up paddleboard center providing sales, rentals, and lessons. LakeGeorgeKayak.com.
Thank you.
Good morning and welcome back to our roundtable panel. A few minutes left. We're going to try to get to as many topics as we can. Before we do that, we'll go to letters, important letters.
Important one. Here's the most important one of all. This is from Charlie. Yes, I remember Alan saying this, and he was and is right.
There you go. Very nice, Charlie.
And then I don't quite get this one from Bob from Auburn, who says, Alan, let them laugh. You remember, you were laughing about memory.
This is memory laughs.
Yeah. Let them laugh. We mock the things we are to be.
Yes, but in that case,
I'm going to forget that letter.
But in that case, you were saying that you were remembering and that you were being a telling us something. You were
that's
prognosticating.
Right, we say
Nostradamus. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And you remember that, so I think that's positive.
I also remember John McCormick.
Yes,
right.
You get points on that as well.
McCormick,
so we were not.
Want to know the most important thing about him very quickly?
Yes, sir.
There are 435 members of the House of Representatives, right?
Yes.
There is. There was a plan when he was the Speaker, they were going to reapportion him out of his district. They just couldn't make the extra district in the area he was in. So they were changing the rules so they would have 436 members of the House of Representatives. But they gave a guy a federal judgeship and sanity was restored.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
All right. All right. We're going to move on to other topics in our 10 minutes left. Let's go to, we were just talking about this during the break. This is a fascinating story to me, which is we've been talking obviously a lot about Cuba and with the president's reestablishing of diplomatic ties to Cuba, and with Cuba, and this is after 50 years, one priority for the administration is persuading Cuba to take back Cuban citizens who have been ordered deported, a longstanding concern for the United States, according to a senior administration official. It is an interesting question of Cubans convicted in the U.S. facing new fears of deportation.
It seems unfair that if you pled guilty to a crime, you're a Cuban, you're a native of Cuba who came to the U.S. and while he didn't get citizenship, was allowed to stay here because of the unique nature of our relationship with Cuba. You commit a crime and you're offered a plea deal and you know that they can't deport you. Had you been from many, 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 most other countries in the world, they just would send you back. Like if you were from Colombia, you'd serve your prison term and then they'd ship you back the day you got out of jail. That hasn't happened. Now, does this mean the government can selectively go through and send a bunch of people back to Cuba? It could be a little scary that the government would sort of have this power now to change the rules.
And I was just checking on the 34,500 other Cubans who face orders of deportation. That's a lot of people.
Yeah, part of what's going on here is that clearly there were negotiations before we decided to do this. In a democracy, it's nice to know what has been decided. But I have a feeling there's a great deal that has been decided between the Cuban authorities and the United States, which we will never know about, including something like this.
So this is the way this is going to work. This is how we're going to do
this. You take
our
prisoners, we'll send parts for your 57 Chevrolet. Yeah.
By the way, Joe, how much is in the lockbox?
We're going to find out in just a second.
Oh, good, good. I can't wait.
Yes. Yeah, I want to bring up one more story, and then we'll bring Megan in. Just because you don't get to say the word gate enough, Deflategate is with us. This is another.
I love this story, and I don't follow
it's
sports.
It's a wild story. So, and I start all of this by saying I'm a huge New England Patriots fan, but if it's true, what the hell were they thinking? Anyway, so the NFL is investigating the New England Patriots for Sunday's game against the Indianapolis Colts, saying that in this game in the downpour in the rain that the team deflated the footballs so that they could to a certain degree to give them a better grip on the ball. Now,
very clever.
Meanwhile, it was a manhandling of the other team, but it was still.
Did they need that advantage?
I don't know, and I don't even know if there was an advantage now. But here's the thing that I just find wild about this story, because I had no idea. So each team gets 12 footballs.
Right.
Did you see this?
Yeah. No, I saw it.
And they're coded and they're barcoded. And then they give 12 to
the officials.
They give 12 to the team, and then to team A, and then 12 to team B, and then there's 12 balls that go to the
ball management team or something,
right?
Like that,
to the officials, and those are the ones that are used for the kicking game. So, my question is: so, if you just hand the ball over to the by the way, you don't get to say deflated balls on the radio quite enough. I just want to say, but you hand them over to the football team, and I guess it's just up to like they have because the ball boy from that team then has the, you know, they're the ones
what?
In charge.
Yeah, they can pick any of the 12. This is like a big honor. This is a
no. I'm saying that
they have control.
They have control. They could alter the inflation of the ball.
They could put a pin in it and take out a little bit of the air, and then it would be easier to grip. And then when in a pouring rain, the quarterback could throw more accurately and propel his team forward.
So we have to talk to the ball boy.
Let them eat cake.
Well, they are talking to the ball boy. Apparently, they're talking to the coach. Coach Bill Belichick has said that he will certainly comply with any investigation.
What's the remedy? Because they're not going to undo the victor of this game. The Super Bowl is also
no. It would be a fine up to $25,000. Up to
$25,000. That's like nothing for them, right?
It's a bunch of hot dogs.
No, the last fine against Bill Belichick for videotaping calls of the new York Jets was $500,000.
Oh, so this is penny ante.
Yeah, this is chump change.
We're going to have deflated balls everywhere.
But I don't know. But again, you have to prove it. And it was also brought up, and I don't know, the initial story was brought up by a journalist from Indianapolis, who was watching the game and became suspect when an official took one of the balls that was in play, looked at it, felt it, and threw it out. Because also weather conditions can deflate the ball.
If you're
kicking the stuffing out of it half the time and people are falling on it, that also can deflate them. So,
Jimmy Kimmel said the only needle used in footballs are for steroids and players.
I love him.
Very good point.
Jay says, I saw the term Balghazi on Facebook, and I laughed out loud.
Balghazi.
That's funny.
Very nice. All right. So that's where we ended this morning. A reminder that we're going to be at the Clark Art Institute tomorrow, broadcasting live from Williamstown, Massachusetts. And we have to have our museum voices on tomorrow.
Oh, we will.
Megan Finnegan is here, the Lockbox, with a Lockbox update, because the fund drive starts February 2nd, and we need a lot of money we have a lot of money, but we need a lot more money to get to the halfway point of the fund drive.
This is so close. We're so close to the halfway mark. I have a bet with one of our staff members that we're going to make it. I said, we can make this. We've always made everything we've tried to do.
Wow, Mr. Positivity. That's great.
Yeah, that's what they call me around here.
I love it. Well, we didn't get any mail yesterday because of the holiday, but we had a lot of pledges online, and now we are up to $367,675 in the lockbox.
Okay. Amen.
And what do we need to get to the halfway point?
Well, to get to $500,000, we'd need another $132,000, which averages about $10,000 a day.
If everybody just, during the fund drive, we average $100,000 a day. This looks doable to me, folks. It really does.
Yeah. Were we supposed to have a mug in here or a bottle in here?
Every time we have one, somebody
somebody's
bottle.
They're very popular.
Not accusing anybody, of course.
We just have one prop in the entire radio show. That's all.
Well,
okay.
It's a gorgeous bottle.
Here it is.
Bottle.
Tell us about it. It's beautiful.
Well,
look at it.
It's 22 ounces. It's stainless steel.
It's beautiful.
It's got the WNC logo. You can have your own name on it, somebody else's name on it. Get one for a friend.
It's dishwater safe.
It's dishwater
safe.
It fits in most
top
car
rack.
Mug holders. Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's beautiful, Joe.
It is. And actually, people have been getting them.
Here comes one. Look.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's
in fact,
one.
My daughter.
There you go. Thank
one.
You, Colleen.
And look at the thing at the top so it never splashes on it.
Is That's
it,
right. Look at
they
that.
Call that again?
It's a straw, a nozzle.
Straw.
Some people call it a nipple, but it's the same thing.
Who are those some people, Alan?
Me.
Yeah. Well, my doctor pledged for one online this morning. She's getting one. Yeah, she's got one. She said,
"Oh, she."
I learned something.
Did she refer to it as a?
She didn't say about the nozzle. No.
Okay.
But she said, "I learned something every day listening to our radio station."
Hey.
So,
yeah.
That was really nice.
There you go.
Yep. Yep.
All right. It's
get
a
one
good
now.
It's a good it's a great premium. It's a lot of fun.
It's beautiful, but
and,
it's really nice.
Very nice and oh, there's something in there. Oh, there's somebody
somebody's using
somebody's
it.
Fluid, isn't there? Apologize. don't. I know what you're thinking. Just don't.
You don't know what I'm thinking.
I know what you're thinking.
Okay, there's been quite enough of balls and nipples. Come on, and fluids. Let's get work.
You people have terribly dirty minds.
So that's all good news, right?
Yep.
We're going to open up the mail today, and we'll have a plethora.
Yep.
And then you won't be with us tomorrow, but we'll find out on Thursday.
Really need it. We really need this.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right.
We're going to do it.
So on Thursday, we'll have an amazing report, and it'll knock us out of the joint. That's right. Thank you, Alan. Mike Spain, Rosemary Romeo, thank you very much for putting up with our antics. We appreciate it. You're very nice. Megan Finnegan, thank you very much for your great work. Alan, a pleasure as always. I'll see you tomorrow at the Clark.
Yeah, I have to be there. What time? 8:30?
Oh, yeah, that'd be good. I think they want to show us around and show us some stuff.
Okay, well, I've already seen it. I was there for the grand opening. So
well, there's new stuff there, but that's okay.
Oh, there is?
Yeah.
Oh,
Monet.
I know Monet's work.
All right. Then you're fine. 8:30
is great.
I have
a Monet tie.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.